We're doing Pirkei Avot. We're up to the fourth chapter, the 12th Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamua Omer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Shamua says the following. Yehi chevod talmidcha chaviv alecha keshelach. The honor of your student should be cherished upon you as your own honor. Uchevod chavercha kemora rabach. So your student, you should cherish his honor as you do your own. Your friend's honor should be like the honor of your Rebbe, umorah rabach kemorah shamayim. And the honor, the awe that one has of his Rebbe should be like the awe that they have of heaven. This Mishnah seems simple, but the truth is it isn't. One of the most difficult things for men to do is to give honor. We like to find the flaws, and it's all about our own ego, so it's hard for us to honor someone else, because then what am I if he's so great? The Mishnah teaches us an attitude. The Mishnah says we should cherish our students' honor like our own. We see that Moshe spoke about Yoshua as his equal. Moshe was told by God, tell Yoshua to go and lead the war. So that's like the chief of staff telling the general, go get the men ready and go out to war. But he doesn't do that. He tells Yoshua, choose for us men. He equates Yoshua with himself, as though they're both on the same level. We find that also with King Saul, that he speaks to the servant as though they were equals. The giants in Jewish history were about giving honor. And the Mishnah tells us that the correct attitude is that one should cherish his student's honor like his own. Cherish it like one's own. And for us men, a lot of life revolves around honor. In different societies, they word it differently, but I once said to a couple that if you want to understand one another correctly, you have to frame your conversations. His conversation is always revolving around how much does she honor, respect, value me? Her conversation is always revolving around how much does he love, cherish, adore me? And they could be having a conversation which sounds like it's about, are we going to meet tonight after work and go home together? So he's focused on, does she appreciate how hard I work? Does she know how much I have to put into it? His whole focus is, does she value, does she respect? Her conversation is revolving around, does he really cherish, does he really love, does he really adore, does he really want to come with me? It seems like it's a simple conversation. The question is, are we going to meet tonight to walk home together? But for him, the conversation he's waiting to hear from her, oh, you work so hard, you do such an amazing job, you're such a loyal worker and such a great breadwinner, and appreciation, respect. And she's having the same conversation, only on a totally different front. And I gave a small example, but the truth is that you could take many of the small arguments that couples have, and if you just break them down, you'll see that that's really what they're both vying for in the conversation. And he who discovers this can really acquire the hearts of many men. I once spoke to a certain head of a corporation, and he was discussing with me how times were tough economically and the workers all wanted to advance. So I asked him, what would happen if he took the top three workers and he advanced their position, their title, and made them business cards with a new title and explained to them that times were tough and he can't give them any serious bonus, but he's advancing them nonetheless, and when times get better, it'll be okay. What? So it's chashev, you know, you tell them how much you value them, you give them business cards, you show them you appreciate them, and you give them a small bonus this year, and you explain to them, look, you know, this is where the business is holding. He didn't do it, so I don't know, you know, I can't tell you the end of the story, because he didn't think it would work. Okay, maybe he's right, I don't know. I agree, it depends on the person, but I think that all of us, on some level, are waiting to be appreciated. Mark Twain once said, when people compliment me, so I always feel like they didn't compliment me enough, and I'm embarrassed that I feel that they didn't compliment me enough, but nonetheless, that's how I feel. And I think most people are that way. So the Mishnah is giving us a formula. The honor of the student should be as cherished as one's own. And the honor of our friend, like the fear we have, the awe we have of our teacher. Very often because someone is our friend, so we feel like equals, and so we can take a jab here or there, and it's all in the family. And with regards to our spouse, so people can very easily slip into that. And that's a big mistake. I don't think you'll ever regret giving someone too much honor. It's interesting that as a friend of the chassan, so I sometimes get the complaints after the wedding. And one of the complaints that I often get from the kala's side is that the chassan didn't give him enough honors under the chuppah. You know, this brother-in-law flew in from Russia, they didn't give him a blessing. How come they didn't give him a blessing under the chuppah? And I've gotten the complaint, how come when he speaks he doesn't show enough appreciation for the kala's side and how much they've invested in all this? And it's interesting that you hear it. They might not say it to his face, but they say it to my face. Like it's as though you didn't teach him good enough. Why didn't you teach him to do better? And the truth is, I've learned my lesson. I always tell chassan in that. Prepare your speeches. Prepare to show appreciation to the other side. You'll never regret giving too much respect to someone. It's rare. It's really rare that you'll regret it. You could only regret not having given enough respect. And the same goes for your kala's parents and your kala's family, and even more so for her herself. Yeah. No. Okay. Umorah rabach kimorah shemaim, and the awe of the teacher like the awe of heaven. It's an interesting duality. On the one hand, we try to grow close to our teachers. On the other hand, there has to be a certain distance and appreciation. And the Mishnayos often remind us of that. And it's something that a person has to think about. I know that there are teachers that when I speak to them, I can't sit down. Even though it's on the phone, I stand up. Because I feel like I'm talking to someone so much bigger than me. I can't be sitting down as I'm talking to that person. The Mishnah wants us to develop within ourselves an awe for someone and for what he stands for. So the Mishnah says, Morah Rabach kemorah shemayim. And part of this is a certain trust and a certain respect that's supposed to develop in the relationship. Now, this is another area that in our day and age has become complicated. Today, you ask a person who he is, and every person has the shul they do attend and the shul they don't attend, the rabbi they do value and the rabbi they don't value, and that's not proper, that's not right. They asked Rav Shlomo Zalman once, why is it that so many people who were big in Torah did not merit to have all their children come out big in Torah? And by him, you see that his children, one by one, each was a giant in Torah. And he felt that it could be attributed to the fact that in his home they never spoke badly about any rabbi. So you don't have to take every person as your personal rabbi. You don't have to take every opinion that's published in the Basheva as the way you're going to lead your life. Some people there deserve the title rabbi, and some people there don't deserve the title rabbi, but that doesn't have to be a conversation at the home. That doesn't have to be a conversation at all. I'm not the one that's giving grades to everyone, and I shouldn't be the one giving grades to everyone. And there's an attitude that should be ever present in the home, and that is an attitude of respect. The Mishnah tells us, Morah Rabach kemorah shemayim, the awe of one's teacher like the awe of heaven. When you come home and you say, he's not a rabbi, what does he know? What your wife hears, what your children hear is, well, the rabbis you have to respect, and the rabbis you don't have to respect. And then one day they walk in and they don't respect your rabbi. So why should you decide which rabbi should and shouldn't be respected? I was on a plane once, and I was sitting next to a guy who was part of the Reform movement. So started discussing with me their difficulties. I think it was male. I don't remember. This goes back a few years. I think so. I don't remember. So he was discussing with me their difficulties that the children don't stay in line and they don't they intermarry and they don't even go to synagogue and they don't continue the way of their parents. So I asked him, I said, you know, do you go in your parents' footsteps? Where were your parents from? Oh, my parents are from Europe, from Lithuania. They were Hasidic Jews, and I'm more advanced. So I said, okay, fine. But You know, you chucked out 85% of what your parents did. So out of your 15%, your children chucked out 85% too. Why? How can you hold that against them? Once you're not consistent, so how can you tell your children that they should stick to your 15%? Why are your 15% more important than something else? It's a tough call. But the truth is that on our level, we have to realize that we also have to be careful. We give a certain tone and a certain attitude within our homes, and the Mishnah tells us that we have to take care that the attitude should be an attitude of respect for those that represent the Torah. Yeah. So I think Sur Meira. I think that we have to distance ourselves from that which is not good. I once lived in a place where the person who headed the shul, who had the title rabbi, was not a nice person. He was a nasty person. And he might have been knowledgeable, but his traits leaved something wanting. I mean, I could tell you stories. I'll tell you a small story. There was a kid in the shul who was a little antsy. And the kid always wanted to help. And he had learning impediments. And every time the rabbi would give him over the head. I don't even like using the title rabbi for this person. But okay, yeah, he had the title in the shul. So at one point, the kid tried to do glila. And he did something wrong in the way he did glila. And the rabbi commented in front of the whole shul. And the kid burst into tears and ran out of the shul. A 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid. So I felt terrible for the kid. But, you know, I was just embarrassed publicly. And the kid never came back to shul. So you wonder what happens to a kid like that, right? He went to Sfaradi shul. In the Sfaradi shul, they were very happy with another youngster who would help them do everything. Learned the Sfaradi everything. Today you'd think he's fully Sfaradi. I was once in shul where he was the Chazan, Baal Kore, everything. So it turned out pretty good. But I left the shul. I never told my wife what happened. Till today, my wife never heard the story you're hearing now. My wife never heard, because I didn't think it was right that in the house we should speak about someone who represents Torah and speak badly about him. I was very bothered by what I saw. Bothered to the extent that I couldn't go back to that shul and daven. Every time I saw, there were nuances, but that was the straw that broke the camel's back. So even though it meant walking every Shabbos 15 minutes instead of going to the shul right near the house, I did it. I said, I can't be a part of that shul. So my wife had questions. How come you're suddenly davening in the shul that's further away? So there are answers. You know, you don't have to go into it. That's not the point at hand. I think that we have to sur meira. We have to distance ourselves from that which is problematic. Sometimes there are all kinds of posters that go up about all kinds of people. So very often guys will ask me in class, and my answer is always consistent. I don't deal with the negative. I don't need to deal with it. I don't know what the truth is. I'm not telling you the person's right. I'm not telling you the person's wrong. I'm telling you I don't want to be focused on that which is problematic or potentially problematic. It's not my job. I don't think it's our job to deal with the problems. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Here I had it happening in front of my face. I said to myself, that's not a shul I want to be a part of. So I left. But I didn't have to explain that to anyone. And if I would have, I would have found a cop-out excuse. I don't think it's important to go into that. And more than that, very often you have to calculate what do you gain and what do you lose. I don't think I could fix it. I'm not the president of the shul. I'm not the one who could do anything. I'm one of the people who happen to have been davening there. I'm saying in most instances we talk about things not because we're going to fix it. It's okay. When a person will be holding there, so he'll go to a bigger rabbi and he'll ask him what to do. In every instance, you have to... I'm very serious. I was growing up, I'll tell you, this was the policy my father had when we were growing up. whenever there was machlokas, whenever there was arguments in the shul, he'd leave. He wouldn't go to a shul where there were arguments. So we went to a steady minyan, and then the youngsters in the minyan decided they were doing a youngsters minyan, that they're leaving all the older people. So they made another minyan for younger people. And my father never joined, because he said, that's a breakaway minyan. So now all the old people are being heard. How come all the young people are leaving us and going to this breakaway minyan? My father always told us, when there's machlokas, when there's argument, don't go, don't get involved. Shouldn't be a part of it. So, but in our community, there was a shul that had a rabbi. They imported a young rabbi. And the young rabbi decided that he's doing things according to his custom. Happens to be the shul had a custom that was over 200 years old, much older than the rabbi. So why did he do this? I don't know what came over him. I don't know why he chose to do it his way. Came Rosh Hashanah, they blew shofar according to his tradition. I don't know why he decided to do that. The whole shul had a different tradition than his tradition. I don't know. I don't know the insides of the story. But what the shul did was they went to an older rabbi from their congregation, someone who was like the senior authority, and they asked him, what do we do? He's going against our custom. He's going against our custom, even on blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so they're still, I think that's the proper way to do it. They went to a more senior authority, and they asked, and then you have similar things in the times of the Chasam Sofer. There was a young community that brought in a rabbi, and the rabbi came to town, and after a few weeks he said, I see you have kosher shechita. I see you have an Erev. I see you have a lot of good kosher things. I don't see a mikveh in town. Where does everyone go to mikveh? Where are all your wives going to mikveh? So they said, well, we all live around the lake, and our wives, when it comes time to go to mikveh, they go to the lake in the backyard. So the rabbi sat down and did the calculations, how much rainwater there was, and how much snow water, and how much stream water. And he said, it's a pasul mikveh. I'm very sorry. I came to the conclusion that the mikveh wasn't the kosher mikveh. So all these years, all the people, their wives, were immersing in a mikveh that was non-kosher. So what do you think the congregation did? They weren't about to take that sitting down. They sent a letter to the chief rabbi of Europe. They sent a letter to the Chasam Sofer saying, what's with our rabbi? We brought in a young rabbi. He thinks he's going to tell us our mikveh is not kosher. So the Chasam Sofer sat down over all the calculations the young rabbi sent him. And he sent back a letter and said, I'm very sorry to tell you, your rabbi's right. He did it right. Throughout the generations, you had situations where congregations thought they had an issue with their rabbi. Sometimes they were right, sometimes they were wrong. More often than not, they were wrong. But there's always a higher authority that one can go to. And I could tell you stories that happened here in the last 5-10 years where congregations felt things were improper, so they went to a higher authority. There's almost always a higher authority you could go to.
And then we get to things of national importance.
Okay, but that's not our subject. So back to our Mishnah. What we saw was that the Mishnah said one should cherish the honor of their students as their own. We discussed that honor is something that you'll never regret giving too much of. We discussed that within the framework of marriage, much of the conversation is really revolving around a husband's desire for honor. And a person who knows how to strum those chords is going to be very successful. Chvod chavecha kemora rabach, honoring one's friend like the awe one's supposed to have of one's teacher. And we said that very often people might err in that because they're so close to their friend. And finally, the awe of the teacher, like the awe of heaven. And we said, again, that's an area where one might err because of the closeness of the relationship. So the Mishnah stresses not to get carried away.